You're listening to the MOA broadcast with Sam Wilson. Will you make it out alive? Okay, folks, we are back with the second half of the MOA broadcast. Let's pick up where we left off. Now, before the break, I related a story or asked a question. What would you do if you went to a restaurant, a taco joint, a burger joint, whatever, and they overcharged you or got your total wrong, whatever, made the mistake, and then on top of that demanded or strongly suggested you should leave me a tip? What would you do? I'll tell you a true story. This happened to me recently. I'm not going to name the restaurant. We're not looking to drag anybody through the mud, anything like that. But I went to a place. I ordered. I placed my order. I paid. I could tell something was wrong. The total was too high. And I'm like, well, hang on. That doesn't seem right. So I'm like, don't go ahead and they were very busy. It was a busy day, and I could see everyone was running at full speed. So I'm like, just whenever we get to my food, let's replace it. And so they overcharged me by $10, okay, or $9, excuse me. So whenever we were done, I'm like, just, you know, she's like, well, I've only got $8 in cash and singles. She opened the till and she only had 8 singles. And I'm eight, you know, $1 bills. I'm like, okay, just give me the 8. Why don't you just, you know, throw an extra handful of fries on, you know, in my order of fries. I love fries. I don't even care about it. Just keep the dollar and just put an extra handful or scoop of fries or whatever. And she goes, extra scoop of fries, you should be giving me a tip. And so she was not only upset that I guess she had made, you know, the mistake or whatever, that I wanted my money back, that I was trying to come up with an amicable way of, why don't you just throw some extra handful of fries? That doesn't cost, I've run a food stand before. It doesn't cost much to do an extra handful of fries to make a happy customer. But the last thing you want to do, in my opinion, when you've made a mistake like that, is then say, well, you should be giving me that money as a tip. And this is a problem here in America. I can't say about the world abroad, but you go into these places now, you order a $4 or $5 coffee, which is insane on its own, for a latte or a breve, and then they want you to leave a tip for, you know, the person that just swivels the iPad around and you swipe your card, not even making change or anything. Some of them won't even take cash. I tried to pay with a $20 bill for a coffee. They're like, we don't accept cash. It's card. Or you gotta pay through the whatever the, I forget the app they had, but I didn't have it. And the options for tip are like, okay, it's not like 10%, 20%. It starts, you know, 50%, $2,000, or you can give us a kidney for a tip. Just for making a coffee. Now, I mean, I got nothing against a good barista, but yeah, this is getting out of control, this tipping culture. So tell us what you would do in that situation. Write us at info@gearconvoy.com. Send us an email. Let us know if you have any tips or suggestions on things you'd like to hear covered. Again, that was info@gearconvoy.com. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Let's get into our next segment. Now, if you live here locally in Klamath County in the Klamath Basin, we have been going through a massive snowstorm for several days now. We're on the fourth day of being under siege by snow. It started, I believe, on Sunday evening. I can't remember exactly. But around Sunday evening, we started getting heavy snowfall. When I checked at the deepest point of it all with a yardstick on a flat metal surface in my backyard, I got 13.5 inches of snow. Now, I don't know what they got in the nearest city, which is about 30, 35 miles away, but that's what I got as measured by a yardstick. I've got friends that are even more remote than me, you know, 20, 30 miles further out. They said they got closer to 2 feet. Obviously, the higher you go up in elevation, we're at 4,200 feet here in Chi-Town, as they call Chiloquin sometimes. So this has been a big deal. We have thousands, depending on where you go for information, thousands without power, without electricity. I read everything, estimates everywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 to 13,000 had power in and out, and there may be several hundred or several thousand currently still without power for multiple days now. No internet, no heat if they heat with electricity. Trees are down, power lines are down, roads are slick. It's a mess. It really is. This leads right into the preparedness, just like what happened in Pensacola and Milton, Florida. Unfortunately, we did have a fatal accident here on the highway on, I believe, Sunday evening. Took 2 lives. Horrible situation. And it's still snowing. It's still coming down out there. We're currently at about 26 degrees right now, but it was a couple of nights ago, it was getting down 16 to 19 degrees. So it's still not over with. And if your power is out, your water may be out, depending on your situation, whether they have a well or a generator or a pump, solar powered. There are a number of different options. Some cities have good generators hooked up to their water treatment plants. But the bottom line is, all of this requires preparation. That takes us to a story to a town. Let's go here. We're not going to name names. This is actually kind of sad. I'm not gonna make fun or jokes of any kind of this particular. This is a Facebook post, a lady asking for help. So this is not to be taken in a comedic fashion by any means. This is to illustrate what can happen if things don't go to plan. Here's her Facebook post. We'll leave a name and location out of it. After 4 days and nights with no power and no heat of any kind, 4 days. Ask yourself when the last time you've gone 4 days straight with no power and no heat of any kind in sub-freezing temperatures. No water, no way to cook or clean. We are at the end of our rope. Our cars are hopelessly buried, so we can't leave. We have 2 dogs and an ancient kitty, and we are all on the verge of freezing. Pacific Power keeps giving us projected times for having our power restored of 6 to 8 hours, but that's been happening for 4 days now. I know the crews are doing their very best. God bless them. I just wish I would have been given a more accurate assessment 3 days ago when we could have gotten out of here and gone to stay with friends in such and such, so on. That's a problem, folks. If you find yourself in that situation, you are in a bad spot, as this lady very well recognizes. She's got an issue on her hands. Her and her family are, and animals and whatever else they have going on there. So what is the point? The time to prepare is not 2 days. We had some warning before this storm. There was news information and weather alerts and so forth a couple of days, several days actually in advance, letting us know. But the question is, what are you going to do with that information? We'll jump right in here. A lot of people like lists of preparedness products, you know, how to be ready. What exactly should I have? What should I have in my kit? I look at it a little bit different. If you want those lists and those kind of things, you can go online and find those easily. That's easy to find. I look at it like the number one, the jumping off point for me personally. And again, every expert is going to have a different way of looking at this, but you should be able to easily do 2 weeks without having to set foot outside your house. Have enough supplies and everything else so that you easily can do 2 weeks without setting foot outside your house. That includes enough food, enough water, other supplies, whatever else you need, the basics, including restroom facilities, to not have to leave your house, whether or not you have electricity and running water or not, for 2 weeks. Now, you may say, hey, you know what? That sounds kind of extreme. I don't want to put that much into it. Ask yourself, that lady, and this is by no means a unique situation. I looked on Facebook. I have Facebook for my business account, and I look in there. There must have been at least 10 or 15 other posts very similar to this. People that have not had power, which means no heat if they have electric heat, for days now. That is a big deal in these temperatures and being covered in snow. So you need to make those decisions beforehand. All of a sudden, being able to, if you would ask that lady, now that she's been without food, water, or excuse me, no water, no heat of any kind, not being able to cook or clean, being prepared for 2 weeks sound extreme? They've already done it for 4 days. This was yesterday. This took place. She posted this. So I guess we're going on day 5 now. All of a sudden, 2 weeks doesn't sound so extreme. There are a number of ways you can approach this. The way I look at it and the way I talk about it whenever I speak with people, you know, informally, just friends or family or whatever, instead of going just after a certain list or a certain type of gear, look at your daily routine. What is it you will need to continue that routine if all power and water were shut off? In quote-unquote survival, there is what's called the rule of threes, okay? You can go 3 hours without shelter, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. Now, obviously, those are rough, you know, projections, but it gives you kind of an idea on the order of importance. The most important thing for them right now is not really food, even though I'm sure they're hungry. It's shelter, meaning being able to maintain your body temperature at a safe level and then enough water, because your body has to have water. And these are things that are easy to do. If you have electric heat and you don't have wood, there are a number of different heating options you can look up. Indoor propane. I'm not going to give particular advice. Everyone has to find what works for them and then check it out and make sure it's safe. But there are a number of heating options, whether it's propane or kerosene, that can be made safe for indoor situations, so that if you lose your electric heat, you're not in serious trouble. Now, they're buried with snow. They may have gotten up to 2 feet of snow or possibly more out there. If they're not young, healthy individuals digging out of that much snow, some people out here have driveways that are several hundred feet to a half mile long. Do you know how long it's going to take? It's not a feasible solution. All the snow dumped at once in a 36-hour period. So you got to prepare beforehand, and that means being, in my opinion, the way I look at it, 2 weeks is a minimum. If you can't do 2 weeks without setting foot outside of your home with no electricity and no water, you're not really prepared for much at all. And that doesn't require a big commitment or investment. Things like rice, coffee, beans, canned goods are easily procured over a couple of weeks or a couple of months time period, to where you can easily have enough to support you and however many people in your family for 2 weeks. Easy. And let's not leave out the heavy hitter, Spam. If you're one of those people who looks down on Spam, you are going to get no mercy here. Spam is a fantastic product, in my opinion. I wouldn't want to eat it every single day. It's a very strong flavored product, has a lot of salt. But if you have a problem with Spam, just ask the folks in Hawaii how they feel about it. Spam was introduced in Hawaii during World War II. The soldiers brought it with them as part of their rations, and it quickly became very popular and very... very commonly used, because it's a relatively cheap product. It preserves very well. And on Hawaii, where everything has to be imported, for the most part, fresh meat is very expensive. So you can find Spam in all kinds of meals there and around the world. I think it's a fantastic product on its own, but it's particularly for emergency preparedness and survival. Cans, either tins of Spam or the individual package servings, make great meals with eggs, rice, all kind of things, and they last a very long time. So very easy to cook. One of these days I'll get around to telling a story about a backpacking trip I took with a bunch of city boys from Portland, Oregon, and they all laughed at my notion of having Spam in the morning, Spam and eggs while on the trail. Let me just put it like this. When they started taking their dehydrated or freeze-dried oatmeal with like two rock-hard blueberries and putting it over the stove and cooking it like some kind of diluted REI commercial, and then I started cooking up my Spam and eggs, they quickly converted and became believers. So that's another story for another day, though. Not to be overlooked, though, you need to plan for restroom facilities. And we're not going to get graphic or explicit here. You can do research online. If the water goes, you may not have toilet facilities. Disease can strike very quickly. This will be a subject for an internet search, but you need to plan ahead. If the sewage facilities no longer work or go down, you're going to have to take care of that yourself, and you don't want to be caught unawares on that front. That's all I'll say for that now. We'll get into that deeper at another time. Let's end on a light note. Let's go to New Hampshire. Where did we go? New Hampshire. There. Okay. Here we go. A Texas man ended up trapped on a cliff after he went into the New Hampshire wilderness with only a cell phone app as his guide. New Hampshire. Okay, this is good. The hiker, a man from Whitney, Texas, had no flashlight, no compass, and no map, officials said. He was rescued Wednesday. When did this take place? This was in mid to late 2024. He had no flashlight, no compass, and no map, officials said. He was rescued Wednesday off the Great Gulf Headwall after spending the night in a spot that he was not able to hike up or down. He was trapped on a cliff face here, according to the release. This predicament was compounded by the fact that he also did not possess any source of light. This is why I always include in survival kits a small flashlight. If you look even my hollow-handled survival kits and knives on gearconvoy.com, they almost always include a small flashlight that puts out a very bright beam and a quality compass. You can fit that in the handle of my knives. You immediately have light and navigation. But let's get on. We're running out of time here. Moving forward, he was, investigators say the 66-year-old man began hiking at 9:30 a.m. Tuesday with intentions of being picked up at the summit on Mount Washington. However, he made a wrong turn, sending him deeper into the wilderness, officials said. As he made his way into the Great Gulf Wilderness, he attempted to navigate his way to the summit of Mount Washington using only a cell phone app, officials said. It was reported to conservation officers that he followed his cell phone app to a location off trail where he became stranded. This is like the episode of The Office where the guy is driving his car and it's leading him into a lake, and his co-pilot is, no, turn, Michael, turn. And he drives into the water because he said, the computer is telling me to do it. So this guy literally walked himself into a spot where he could not get out of and couldn't see to navigate out of because his phone told him to. We talked about this with the dependence on cell phones. The hiker's partner placed a call for help, and with all the facts and circumstances. Now, get a load of this. The New Hampshire rescue team must not have been very pleased. When they called in with all the facts and circumstances, a decision was made to have the man stay the night, officials said. So this guy follows his phone. He gets lost in the woods. He calls for help, and they're like, you know what, bud, just take a time out. We'll pick you up in the morning. And that's what they did. They picked him up the next morning. They found the man stuck precariously about one-tenth of a mile off the trail. A mile is 5,280 feet. A tenth of that is about 528 feet or so. That means he was less than 2 football fields away from the trail and couldn't find himself out of there. I would probably be upset, too. To show you how upset the New Hampshire SAR was, they posted a photo. They posted a photo on Facebook showing the hiker trapped among trees and shrubs on a steep rock wall. And I am looking at this photo right now. It's just some guy stuck on a rock wall. But they put this up on their Facebook. So hopefully he learned his lesson. And it ended, let's see, it ended Mountain Summit around 1:30 p.m. Officials said because of his lack of essential items and poor choices throughout the entirety of his hike, it has been recommended that he be billed for the expenses associated with the rescue, the state said. Details of the cost were not released. So I guess he better get his credit card ready. Okay, that's it, folks. Remember, prepare ahead of time. Don't wait for an emergency to dig your gear out and get all your crap out and realize you have made mistakes. Be ready beforehand. If you don't make it out alive, you won't make it out at all. Stay safe out there, folks.